To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, hope you're good, hope you're well. Welcome to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, part of course, the 90 Men Football family, with me, your host, Harry Simeon. It's Sunday night, I'm chilling, I've just turned on the TV, I'm about to dive into the Clásico, so I'll be keeping you up to date with what's going on in that for those of you joining us live as of course that unfolds. We're not going to be going for the whole duration of the game, don't worry, but for the first half an hour or so, I'm sure I'm going to be with you, so I will keep you across any major developments in that. But I do want to talk about what I believe to be probably one of the most difficult things for a manager at the elite level to get right, and that is rotation. There's been so much talk recently about Mikel Arteta's ability or inability to rotate, depending on what angle you're looking at this from. I think we can all agree that a number of Arsenal players at this business end of the season look tired, look like they've run out of steam, look like they're really kind of having to dig into the reserves at the moment in order to deliver the kind of performances that we've become accustomed to over the last sort of year and a half. And so it begs the question, does Mikel Arteta rotate enough? Does he rotate effectively? Does he rotate because he believes it's just not the right thing to do? Or sorry, does he not rotate as much because he just doesn't think it's the right thing to do? Or does he, you know, does he feel like there are still gaps in the squad that mean he can't do it as much as maybe in an ideal world he'd like to? We'll talk about the impact that injuries have had on this. We'll talk about all of it. We'll go right into the depths of this subject. And I'm really looking forward to getting you guys' thoughts from the live chat box as well. Because I think this is a really, really, really interesting conversation and a really, really interesting debate to have. What I did ahead of pressing the go live button was bring up via transfermarkt.co.uk or whatever the ending of that website domain is, the list of Arsenal players. And I filtered it by those who have played the most minutes. William Saliba has played every single Premier League minute for Arsenal so far, from what I understand. 45 appearances this season. He's played over 4,000 minutes. Gabriel Magalhaes, just shy of 4,000. Declan Rice isn't far behind him. Ben White's in that sort of territory. Martin Odegaard too. Bukayo Saka, Kai Havertz. There's a lot of Arsenal players that have really, really been, you know, heavily worked this season. And I know that's what's required to be at the very top level. And I'm not suggesting for a second that anybody should be sort of sitting there whinging and complaining about it. But I think when you look at that, it's difficult not to feel that Arsenal could have rotated a little bit more effectively along the way. Now, this was a subject that kind of semi came up in the podcast that we did reflecting on the game at Wolverhampton Wanderers. And if you haven't listened to that yet, you can. It is the last video on this channel. If you're with us via YouTube, it is the last podcast on your feeds if you're listening to us on audio. So do take that in. My thoughts on the Wolves game. It was recorded about 20 minutes or so after the full-time whistle last night, or Saturday night. You might be listening to this on Monday. But do check that out because, you know, I shared my thoughts on the game and we did kind of, very briefly, touch on this debate around whether or not Mikel Arteta could have and probably should have rotated more. And the thing that I keep coming back to when I start going down that road of thought of, you know, maybe Mikel could have managed the squad a little bit better and maybe he should have done things a little bit differently. The thing I always come back to is, what guarantee do I have that if Mikel Arteta did rotate more earlier in the season, that we'd have amassed as many points as we have? that we'd still be in a position going into the final few games where, you know, we're competing for the title. You know, we're top of the league as we record this, despite Liverpool winning today against Fulham. So I think it's one of those debates that you're never really going to know the answer to, but I think it's one that's really interesting when you kind of break it down, when you kind of slice it open, dissect it, and look at all the different elements. So first of all, how difficult is it to rotate effectively? As I've kind of touched on there, I think it's the hardest thing to do in elite level football. I really, really do believe that, because finding the balance between rotating enough so that you can, A, give the players that are key to your side the breathers that they need in order to keep them close to their peak condition for as long of the season as you possibly can. Also to get those players that are coming in and out of the team enough minutes so that when they are called upon, they're in a good position from which to help you and support you. To get all of that right is really, really difficult. You look at sort of squads and you say, well, you know, Manchester City, for example, have a really strong squad, lots of very, very capable deputies. And I would argue that this season you could say that about Arsenal too. But it's different saying capable deputies and then saying players that can come in and do as good a job as the ones that you would start with. So, for example, Leandro Trossard is a very, very good player to bring into your side. It's clear to me that Mikel Arteta most of the time prefers Gabriel Martinelli. I don't think that's because Martinelli contributes more necessarily in terms of outputs, because he doesn't. I think it's because he brings something to the team very specific that Mikel Arteta likes against certain opposition, and he feels is important to the balance of the side. So Leandro Trossard misses out on the starting 11 quite a bit as a result of that. But I think we can all agree that whether it is Trossard on a Saturday afternoon or Gabriel Martinelli, none of us are looking at it and going, oh, you know, that could be a difference maker. That's a real problem. You know, I think we look at both of those players and we think very good footballers, both capable of contributing goals, both capable of making a difference in the final third. I don't really mind too much which one plays. Another couple of positions where we have similar debates are in the center of midfield. We've seen Mikel Arteta on many occasions this season opt to play Kai Havertz in midfield over the likes of Jorginho, for example. And a lot of the time we said that that was down to maybe Thomas Partey not being available. Thomas Partey's back now and we still don't see him starting games, but we do see Mikel Arteta varying it up between having Havertz or having Jorginho in that midfield alongside Declan Rice and Martin Odegaard, who are mainstays in there. Another position is the left-back position. Kivior, Zinchenko, Tomiyasu have all played at left-back this season, and Jurrien Timber probably would have been a big part of that rotation. You could argue he would have been the one who held down that position the most had he been fit and available all season. He hasn't been, and that's been a problem. But when you think about that, right, I've just named you the left side of Arsenal's team. I've named you, you know, everything that we have down the left, our left back, the left-sided midfield player, and then the left winger. Those are the three positions that Mikel Arteta does tend to rotate. And you could argue that the fact that we always rotate in those positions actually makes our left side significantly weaker than it does our right because of a lack of stability. And I think we struggle, and we have struggled this season with those relationships on the left-hand side. Last season, every time Granit Xhaka got the ball, for example, in that left-sided position in midfield, he knew where Gabriel Martinelli was going to be. He knew what run he was going to make. He knew where Oleksandr Zinchenko would be drifting into in order to try and pick him out and get him involved in the game as well. There were those relationships. This year, those relationships haven't really been there. So you could argue that when it comes to Arsenal's left-hand side in particular, Mikel Arteta has rotated too much. But people would tell you that actually Mikel Arteta has not rotated enough. And that is why you're seeing certain players at this business end of the season just losing a bit of form. Now, I'm not saying anyone's gone into kind of car crash territory in terms of their form, whereby we should be sitting here now and pulling individuals apart. But I think we can all agree that the level physically has dropped. We saw it in the second half of the Villa game. We saw it in the second half of the game away at Bayern Munich. And we saw at points in the game against Wolves this weekend that we weren't quite at our peak physical condition. And Declan Rice seemed to find a kind of second wind, didn't he? Especially when Thomas Partey came on right at the end, which was great to see. But that was an example of what I mentioned earlier on in the podcast. Someone digging into their reserves to make sure that they could get themselves over the line and deliver what we needed them to deliver on that day. Some of the players that I would argue have probably not been utilised enough would be Thomas Partey. You know, he would be somebody that I think, you know, given that he's come back to fitness, should have probably played a bigger part in this running, might still play a significant part in the running. But, you know, it feels like at the moment he's just out of favour. Fitness plays a part in this decision, I'm sure, and is the main reason, I'm sure. I don't think it's because of a lack of ability. But I think you look at him and you think, why isn't he being rotated into the team a little bit more currently? Some people would argue Emile Smith Rowe. That's one that I don't want to rubbish, but I don't really understand. I mean, I'd love you guys in the chat to tell me, who would Emile Smith Rowe come into the team and do a job to replace? Because for me, he's not an out-and-out left winger. He certainly isn't going to give you what Martin Odegaard gives you off of the ball and defensively in terms of leading the press from the front. Emile Smith Rowe doesn't give you any of that stuff. Not anywhere near the same level that Martin Odegaard does. People have talked about Fabio Vieira, obviously had some surgery, I think, back in November and hasn't been able to get back in the side since returning. People will tell you, you know, why haven't we shaken it up at centre-back a little bit? Why haven't we used Jakub Kivior at centre-back when, you know, we've used other options at left-back? I guess for me, there are certain positions in a team that you don't really want to rotate. And Mikel Arteta will talk about the fact that in his mind, you know, everybody is equal and everybody will be decided or everybody's game time will be decided based on merit, how they perform in training, what they go out and do at the weekend or every 3 days in the situation that we find ourselves in currently. But there is clearly a hierarchy in this Arsenal team, as there is in every team. So it's not necessarily a bad thing or something that we should be jumping up and down about. But there's clearly a hierarchy in this team and there's clearly some players that Mikel Arteta regards as a vital to this team's success, and that Mikel Arteta will never rotate willingly unless he's super confident we're going to win a game, maybe in a cup competition against a lower level of opposition, or that player is flagging, is injured, is unable to participate for whatever reason. And I'll run you through who I believe those players are. And I, you know, it's not rocket science to figure this out. These are the players that have played the most bloody minutes. You know, the two centre-halves. David Raya now in goal. Although, you know, I think mentally fatigue can be a problem for goalkeepers. But I don't think that I want to include David Raya in the conversation when I'm talking about players that are maybe running on empty. He's played a lot of minutes, obviously. 3,270 minutes for Arsenal this season. But I think a goalkeeper is different. And I think we should treat a goalkeeper differently for the purpose and context of this discussion. But look, he doesn't want to rotate the two centre-halves, and he certainly wants Ben White in the team every single week. Because the way Arsenal like to build up a lot of the time means that Ben White is part of a back three rather than part of a back four. And Ben White is an incredibly versatile player, because when you want him to do that job of a slightly more traditional fullback and get up and down that right-hand side, he can also do that. And he's done that at times, I would argue, to a very, very good effect. So those three, White, Saliba, Gabriel, they're mainstays in the team. Rice, you paid £100+ million for the guy, and he's just been magnificent, really, from start to finish. Of course, he's going to be a mainstay. Of course, when he's fit and when he's available, he is going to be in the team. Had Thomas Partey been fitter earlier, and had he got up to speed maybe quicker, I do wonder if there would have been one or two occasions where Declan Rice maybe would have got a rest. And, you know, people probably would have turned their noses up at that point and at that time and said, what on earth is going on? How can you leave your £100 million plus midfielder out? But I think with somebody like Declan Rice, yes, he's been playing in the Premier League. And yes, with West Ham, he got used to that grueling schedule of Sunday, Thursday football. But the level's gone up. The level has risen here. And I do believe that going into the season, Mikel Arteta would have been using Jurrien Timber at left back probably more than anybody else. I do believe that had Partey been fit from the start of the season, you would have seen that Partey, Rice and Odegaard midfield much more often. You probably would have seen some variations of that in terms of, you know, maybe one of them dropping out, maybe that being for Kai Havertz or whatever. But there are a group of players, a core of players that Mikel Arteta sees as imperative to any success that we might have. I've mentioned Odegaard, I've mentioned Rice. Saka is another one. Martinelli and Trossard, as we've discussed, interchangeable, those two. The centre forward position is up for grabs right now because we've seen both Jesus, we've seen Havertz, and we've even seen Trossard play as a false nine at times this season. It feels like Eddie Nketiah has fallen away in terms of the pecking order. And I don't blame Mikel Arteta for making that decision, but I do see it as a massive U-turn because he's someone that he really, really did put a lot of faith in at various points when us as fans and supporters, we just couldn't understand why. Nothing personal against Eddie Nketiah. I think he's a good footballer. I think he's a talented player. And I think he'll go on and have a good career somewhere. But I just don't think Arsenal is his level and is the right place for him. But I say that the centre forward role is kind of up for grabs in this team. But I'll tell you what, Kai Havertz's status as one of the, you know, really important players in this team, as one of the indispensables, if you want to call him that, is cemented. It really, really is, because he is picked every single week. And even when Mikel Arteta wants to go with something else up front, I genuinely do believe that it's his desire to keep Kai Havertz in the team that sees him sometimes drop back into midfield. And that tells you all you need to know about how much Mikel Arteta values Kai Havertz's contributions, both in midfield and in attack. For those of you watching us live at the moment, there's been a goal in the Clásico. Barcelona have just taken the lead at the Camp Nou, a whipped-in corner from the right-hand side, and it was Andreas Christensen who rose above Toni Kroos at the far post to header in. Lunin came and got nowhere near it. Nowhere bloody near it. Real Madrid 0, Barcelona 1 in the Clásico, 6 minutes in. That should make for an interesting remainder of this game. So I thought a good exercise to do in order to kind of try and establish where we're at with the rotation stuff and whether or not Mikel Arteta is justified in possibly feeling that, yes, he's got a deeper squad than he did last time around, and that's great, but maybe that he's still lacking in terms of quality in a few areas. If we zoom in here just on Arsenal's... Oops, I'm zooming in on the wrong tab. Hold on a second. There we go. Let's zoom in on Arsenal's substitutes yesterday at Wolves. There you go. So, let me just zoom out this other tab. It's making my bloody eyes hurt. I don't know what I was doing there. Okay, so look at that bench yesterday, right? Aaron Ramsdale. There was a time this season where a lot of Arsenal fans would have made the case to say that Aaron Ramsdale is as good as David Raya, and that whichever one of them played, it didn't really make that much difference. I know he's had limited game time, and I know it's really, really difficult coming in from the cold. But when you look at how Aaron Ramsdale's performed when he has come into the team, I think that whole discussion and debate has probably been put to bed. When you look at how many clean sheets Arsenal have kept, what is that, 6 consecutive clean sheets now on the road in the Premier League for Arsenal? You know, that kind of puts this conversation about the goalkeeper to bed. So Ramsdale as a substitute goalkeeper looks really good, but can you say that the level doesn't drop slightly at least when he comes in? Yeah, it probably does at the minute. Partey is a player that we know has all the qualities in the world. We've discussed it already. But could you bring him in now and could he do the same job as Declan Rice, given that he's still not 100% fit? Even a fatigued Declan Rice feels like he can cover more ground than Thomas Partey at this moment. Emile Smith Rowe, another player that was on the bench on Saturday. I've talked about him already. Where does he fit in? I'm not so sure. People keep telling me he's a left eight. I don't really see it. I've got to be honest with you. I think the reason that Kai Havertz can go back into that left eight position and do it quite well is because he uses his frame really well, and he does the defensive side of the game too, which I have to say, I don't think Emile Smith Rowe has in his locker. I think Emile Smith Rowe is a 10, but we don't play with a 10 anymore. So that's a problem for him. And I think that's where the reluctance on Mikel Arteta's part comes from to bring him into the side. Martinelli yesterday, okay, we've already talked about him being interchangeable with Trossard. He was on the bench for us yesterday. Nketiah, fallen down the pecking order. Jorginho, I think, has a very specific skill set and works in certain games against certain styles. And I do think that in a couple of games recently, Bayern at home, for example, Manchester City away not so long ago, we did see the game bypass Jorginho a little bit, which makes me think that he isn't someone that you want to bring in, you know, one week and then the next without taking into consideration that the opposition that you're facing and the context of the game. Fabio Vieira, has anyone been blown away by Fabio Vieira to the point where they would say to Martin Odegaard happily on a Saturday afternoon, have a rest and we'll bring this guy in? I don't think any of us are there. And Nelson, I think, is significantly weaker than our other wide options. I think he looks energetic, he looks lively, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there isn't really that much end product there a lot of the time with Reece Nelson. And then the other player is Oleksandr Zinchenko, who, again, a bit like Jorginho, is a useful player to have, very experienced, brings you something, but only in certain games, only against certain opposition. So you look at that bench and you say, strong bench on the surface of it. But how many of those players can you bring in and say they are definitely 100% going to do a job as good as the player that they'll be replacing? Now, I'm not saying any team has this because I think there are drop-offs everywhere. You take Manchester City, for example, and you look at Rodri. They don't have anybody that can come in and do the defensive midfield role the way that Rodri can. They don't have anybody that can do what Erling Haaland can because his skill set is very specific. You know, John Stones. There's a load of players in that team too. Bernardo Silva, Kevin De Bruyne, you know, Phil Foden. These are unique players. And you're never going to have 18, 19 players all of the same standard. That's just not how football works. But, you know, I'll use another example and I'll kind of round up this point in a minute. But you look at Liverpool. I mean, look at what Trent Alexander-Arnold managed to do today. Look at that free kick. People were talking about Conor Bradley a few weeks ago as being brilliant, and he is brilliant. He's a young player making his way. He's doing great. But can he do what Trent Alexander-Arnold did today, put the ball down and strike a free kick in from however many yards? No. You know, this. However good a team is, the squad players are squad players for a reason. I really do believe that. Virgil van Dijk is another example of someone in that Liverpool team that you can't really replace. Okay, he's having a bit of a dip in form at the minute, but Mo Salah is another one of those players. And so the art of rotation is when you can figure out, based on your opposition maybe, based on the condition of some of your other key players, how much you can afford to rotate, in which positions you can afford to rotate, which relationships are strong enough that you can sort of, you know, use temporarily or use in the short term, i.e., let's take it with an Arsenal example, is the relationship between Kivior and Trossard on the left-hand side for Arsenal strong enough that you can play those two in the biggest of games? Or does Martinelli come into the picture sometimes partly because of who the left back is or who's playing in the left eight position? I think all of that is so interesting and it's so much more complex than people, would ever kind of have you believe when you just look at things on the surface. I just think that the art of rotation is knowing how many players you can afford to rotate, when you can afford to rotate them, and making sure that you are at your best in other areas and that maybe you adjust some of the routes that you play through or some of the shapes that you take up when you defend in order to ensure that you do not expose those squad players when they come into the team. For example, right, a good example of this is when we bring Jakub Kivior into left back and we ask him to go and roam around in midfield like Oleksandr Zinchenko does, what happens? He looks completely out of place. He looks lost and it's a problem for us. And Mikel Arteta, made that change, didn't he, quite recently, a few months ago now. But he sort of gave Ben White that additional license to drift into midfield and play that inverted role when Kivior was playing at left back, and basically said to Kivior, look, I know you are a centre back, and I also know, without being horrible, that you're not as versatile as Ben White. So I'm not going to ask you to be the one that goes and gives us something in midfield. I'm going to ask Ben White to do that. And that was a good example of Mikel Arteta managing the personnel that he had available that day and making a slight tweak, which is also part of rotation, by the way, in order to give his team the best chance of succeeding. So I've gone around the houses a little bit, but in conclusion, does Mikel Arteta rotate enough? I think he does. I think he does. I think where Mikel Arteta can rotate, he does. And there are three positions in the team, as I've referenced, that I think he does rotate in quite frequently. The numbers tell you that. There are positions where he doesn't feel he can rotate because I think he believes that there's still a significant drop-off between those that start games and those that will be coming in, i.e. White versus any other right-back, Odegaard versus any other sort of right-sided eight, Saka versus any sort of other winger that we have. I think he feels like he can't really afford to rotate in those areas because of the drop-offs. And so I'm not going to sit here and say that Mikel Arteta doesn't rotate enough. What I will say, though, is that I think in-game management plays a part here. And when we're talking about people getting fatigued, people running out of steam at this point in the season, and people say, well, it's because he hasn't rotated enough, I don't think it's to do necessarily with just the starting 11 he picks. I think there have been plenty of opportunities where he could save 20 minutes of Bukayo Saka's legs, where he could save 20 minutes of Martin Odegaard, where he could save 20 minutes of Declan Rice. And if you saved, you know, 20 minutes with each of your key players or some of your key players once every 4 or 5 weeks over the course of the season, that makes a big difference. If you save, you know, a couple of hundred minutes over the course of the season, I think that plays a big, big part. I think there are really kind of fine margins when you're talking about this kind of stuff and when you're analysing this kind of stuff. And I feel like if Mikel Arteta was a little bit... And look, you don't want to get cocky in games. You don't want to be in a game and be 2-0 up and start taking off all your best players, letting your level drop, falling asleep, doing a bit of a Manchester United and ending up in a position where, you know, you're throwing, you know, leads away and things like that. So I think that's where, if I were to be critical of Mikel Arteta, I'd say that he maybe could have done a bit more in terms of saving people for this point of the season. But in terms of the wider question as to whether Mikel Arteta rotates enough or not, I think he rotates as much as he feasibly can without the level of the team dropping off. And you can say that if he rotated earlier on in the season, we might be in the position to challenge for the league and be in tip-top condition come the end. The other thing that you got to factor in here, and the other thing that I think you got to look at, is I think sometimes we can be obsessed with the Arsenal world and we can sort of lose touch of what's going on around us. I think if you zoom out, the fact that Liverpool and Manchester City are having the same issues as us right now, I think answers your question in that. Well, that could have just been the podcast, right? But it basically answers your question and tells you that, yeah, maybe the manager could have done a little bit more in terms of what I've been speaking about around game management. But, you know, it's harsh to sort of really point the finger at him, given that there's so many experiencing these issues at the moment. There is a penalty in the Clásico right now. Real Madrid penalty, chance to make it 1-1. Vinicius Junior steps up and the keeper went the right way, Ter Stegen, but he squeezed it into the bottom corner. Vinicius Junior, it's Real Madrid 1, Barcelona 1. At the Santiago Bernabeu. That's a great game. Head over and watch that because we're going to be wrapping up in the next 10 minutes or so. Okay, I do want to touch on that FA Cup semi-final between Manchester United and Coventry City, which I think was absolutely bonkers. Manchester United have somehow made it to the FA Cup final. They were 3-0 up in the FA Cup semi-final against Coventry City. And I turned it over. I started watching Liverpool's game at Fulham because I thought that the FA Cup semi-final was done and dusted. And then I checked the score and it was 3-2 to Coventry. So I flicked it back on. Manchester United under Erik ten Hag, they're so soft-centered. They're so weak. They're so fragile. And to allow Coventry City to come back from the dead, to come back from three goals down and force that to penalties is, for me, an absolute disgrace. Now, I know people will point at Erik ten Hag, and I know there'll be other people that point at the players. I think they're all culpable here. I don't want to make this a tirade only against Erik ten Hag. I've said for a long time that I don't think he's good enough to be the Manchester United manager. I don't think this season they've shown any improvement from where they were last season. In fact, they've shown regression. All Erik ten Hag does is complain about injuries, the type of injuries that so many managers have had to deal with. He keeps referencing that game at the Emirates Stadium for some weird reason. He done it again today, which drives me absolutely bonkers. Manchester United ended up getting through that tie via the penalty shootout. And Rasmus Højlund scored the winning penalty, and he sort of ran off to celebrate behind the goal where the Manchester United fans were located. And you know what? Not a single Manchester United player followed him and went over to celebrate. Normally, when somebody wins a penalty shootout, the whole team sprints from the halfway line. This Man United team didn't do that. You know why? Because they were embarrassed. They were embarrassed by that performance. They were embarrassed by the fact that they were 3-0 up, threw it away against Coventry City, and were a toenail's length away from being dumped out when Coventry thought they'd found the winner deep into stoppage time of extra time. What a moment that would have been. VAR stepping in and breaking Coventry City hearts. But, you know, I just look at that Manchester United team and I just think all I ever hear from them is Sir Jim Ratcliffe. He's going to fix it. He's going to change it. He's going to, you know, he's going to turn it all around, et cetera, et cetera. And he's the solution. You know, I look at it and I think, well, maybe he might be in time, but he's not going to be with Erik ten Hag still in the manager's position. So I just thought that was telling, the way that the Manchester United players sort of, you know, finished up with muted celebrations, I think says a lot about how they felt at the end of that game, and that they knew that it was a very uncomfortable afternoon, and one that, you know, yeah, okay, they'll get to the final now and they'll be able to sort of forget about, but the next few days in terms of the coverage around that are going to be pretty rough for Manchester United and Erik ten Hag, who I'm sure is going to start defending himself and coming up with all sorts of nonsense about the game between Manchester United and Arsenal way back in September of 2023. But anyway, I do want to talk about the Nottingham Forest thing as well. We'll touch on that in just a second. That was another strange turn of events, shall we say. We're going to take a short pause, and when we come back, we'll do that before we go. Okay, let me bring that tweet up that Nottingham Forest put out, by the way. So I didn't watch the Nottingham Forest game. They were, of course, defeated at Everton, a really damaging result for them. It means that Burnley, I think, are just 3 points behind them now. Burnley, that everybody had written off not so long ago. Let me just bring up the Premier League table and confirm that. 1 second. The Premier League website's always got an advert at the beginning of it, for God's sake. Talk about marketing. Yeah, look, Burnley, 23 points. Nottingham Forest on 26. So they're in a really precarious position, Nottingham Forest, at the moment. Their goal difference is significantly better than Burnley. So even if Burnley were to make up that 3 points, Nottingham Forest, you feel, you know, would really need to press the sort of self-destruct button for Burnley to kind of make up that goal difference. So they probably need to make up more than just they definitely need to make up more than just the 3 points. So it's not quite time to panic. I saw some of the highlights of this game. I saw the Ashley Young handball, which I thought was a handball, by the way. And I thought that Nottingham Forest were well within their rights to feel aggrieved by that, and were well within their rights to feel frustrated by some of the decisions today at Goodison Park. But what we saw after that was nothing short of shocking. And I'm not saying it's shocking because I think it's super, super bad. Like, I've seen some people coming out saying this is a disgrace and, you know, they should be kicked out of the league. And, you know, how can this be allowed to happen in 2024? And it makes a mockery of the football club. I don't really feel that strongly about it. What it says to me, and I can say this as a Greek, is that this club is definitely run by a Greek nowadays, because that is the most Greek thing that you could ever do. Be really kind of like open, blunt, forthright about what you want to say with no regard for the processes that are normally in place for this type of thing. But this was the Nottingham Forest statement. I say statement, it was a Twitter post. This is what they put out. Three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. Nottingham Forest Football Club will now consider its options. So they've outed the VAR as being a Luton Town supporter. I don't know if that's true. I don't know where they've got that information from. But they've done that. They've outed him. They've said that they've warned the PGMOL. Sounds a little bit threatening, doesn't it? You know, we simply cannot accept these decisions. We warn the PGMOL. Our patience has been tested multiple times, and Nottingham Forest will now consider its options. Okay, I understand that. But what are Nottingham Forest's options here? Because from where I'm standing, I can't really see any. So I'm finding it very, very difficult to understand what it is they're suggesting here. Like, what are they going to do about this situation? There are bad refereeing calls all of the time. And I do understand, I'm not trying to be one of those guys that says, oh, just shut up and get on with it. I do understand that when you're embroiled in a relegation battle, it must feel 10 times worse than even when you're in a title race and you feel like you've been wronged, because this is the future of your club at stake in terms of, you know, where they might be for the next few years. We've seen so many clubs drop down into the Championship and disappear for a long period of time. So I get why there is that frustration, and I get why there is a desperation to see a higher standard of officiating. But I would love someone to tell me in the comments what exactly Nottingham Forest think they're going to be able to do about this. And I'm interested to know whether you think they should be punished, actually, for putting this out. There was a meme going around of Evangelos Marinakis, the Nottingham Forest owner. And it was a meme. It wasn't real, but it was him sort of staring at a member of staff. And the caption was, give me the password now. And the guy was like, to what? To the Twitter account. Like, it's just, it's mad, isn't it? It's crazy. I'm going to be following this story really, really closely, because I'm intrigued to see where this goes. Like, will Forest get a slap on the wrist for this? Will the PGMOL put out one of those lousy TV shows with Michael Owen in the next few days telling everybody that they got the decisions right, even though lots of us could see that they didn't? I don't know. Where is this going to go? How is this going to unfold? It's going to be fascinating to see, of course. Let me see what you guys are saying in the chat. Just going back to the Manchester United thing, 13X says, so gutted for Coventry. Yeah, me too, mate. Me too. Archangel says that Stuart Atwell was the official in question there. Ian says maybe there's a points deduction that could sort of come to the fore. Another points deduction. Can you imagine? Like, Forest would look so silly now if after all of this, you know, they get another points deduction, and that is what relegates them. And it would have been of their own making. Well, I mean, the fine that they got, I mean, sorry, the rules that they broke and the situation they found themselves in previously was of their own making too. But you know what I'm trying to say? Yeah, strange one. I did tweet at halftime of that game, I think it was, something like Nuno Espirito Santo's called Mark Clattenburg up to warm up, because of course Mark Clattenburg is their advisor when it comes to refereeing decisions. I mean, I thought that was really, really funny. It didn't really pick up much traction on social media, so maybe it wasn't. But hey, Wesbird says, unfortunately, every team has been unfairly treated through VAR, but you have to take it. But you can understand their frustration. Problem is, you're not allowed to say anything. Simple. Yeah, interesting. Interesting, isn't it? Really, really is. Guys, I am going to leave it there. I'll let you get on with your Sunday evenings. Thank you, as always, for joining me. It is very, very much appreciated. Don't forget to leave a like on the video if you haven't done so already. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel if you're brand spanking new. If you're listening on audio, please do leave us a review as well. That really, really does help. And we'll be back Very, very soon with more. We're going to focus on that game coming up against Chelsea at the Emirates Stadium on our next episode. Stay tuned for that. I'll see you all next time. Until then, goodbye.